2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why, like you, he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. All so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mr. Perfect did it again in Barcelona to take his second consecutive victory in the Spanish Grand Prix.
The man who won his first Grand Prix here in 2016 has swept them all away once again. Round the final corner for the final time, the Dutch driver will see the checkered flag first, and it's win number 40 in Formula One for Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen wins the Spanish Grand Prix to win three in a row, lead every lap, and dominate proceedings.
Very well done, Max. A beautifully controlled race. You're now 53 points ahead of your teammate in the World Championship. You were fastest in FP1, FP2, FP3, qualifying here. Just how sweet is this period for you?
It's a good period, but you know, we have to keep on working and trying to find more performance. I'm happy in the car, and I think the last few race weekends have been definitely a lot more positive for me. But, you know, this is one weekend where I think it went really well. But we also know that maybe some other tracks, it's not like this, you know. So still a lot of races to come where we, again, have to perform really well to try and win the race.
Quite a lot was made on the TV of you getting the black and white flag for track limits. I think it was turns 5 and 10. Can you just talk us through what was going on there?
It happens sometimes. I mean, some tracks... It's a bit easier to do, and I was struggling a little bit with the harder tires to keep it within the white lines. They don't know how much pace I have in the car, right? When they tell me, oh, this is the fastest lap, don't bother. But I knew that I could do it. So, yeah, just had to keep it within the white lines. But this is something I think we can laugh about already. I mean, I was laughing about it with Helmut after the race, so I'm pretty sure that they're quite happy.
Welcome, everyone, to F1 Nation. And joining me, Tom Clarkson, to debrief all things in Spain, we have Jesus Balsero from Diario AS and Christian Maynat from motorsportmagazine.com. Guys, thank you very much for joining us on F1 Nation. Was that the most dominant performance we've seen from Max Verstappen this year? Jesus?
I would say yes, especially because he could have missed one stop probably and still have win the race with a decent gap over the Mercedes. And the fact is that is the Mercedes the second car here? That's the difference. So maybe we miss the Aston. We obviously miss the Ferrari there. So maybe that's the reason why the gap seems bigger now. Maybe Mercedes is the same place as the last race, but the others are not, and Max is alone by himself and winning so comfortable here in Spain.
Christian, what I love about Max Verstappen is his champion's mentality, right? He dominated that race. Once he dealt with Carlos Sainz at the start, that was it. Done. Yet, he still was pushing it. You know, those track limits, transgressions, the desire to get fastest lap. He's unstoppable in that way.
Yeah, that's Max as we know him. I mean, he's been like that since his first day in Formula One. And yeah, as you say, that's a champion mentality. Not every driver is probably like that, but yeah, the champions they are.
Does he have any weaknesses?
I haven't thought about it for quite a while. I mean, in the title battle with Lewis in 2021, you could say that sometimes he was a bit over-aggressive, but now he doesn't have so many battles on track, so it's difficult to judge nowadays. But I think also his risk assessment is amazing. When you saw the start against Sainz, he was on the medium tire, Sainz on the soft tire. He knew it's going to be important to still have the lead. I mean, whatever would have happened, he would still have won the race, even if he would have been fifth, sixth, seventh, probably last after the first lap. But also, he took the risk. He didn't take too much risk. He knows he has much more to lose than the others. So it's difficult to say if there is still a weakness, because at the moment he doesn't need to show everything.
Yeah, after the race, Jesus, he was saying, I really want these guys to come. He was looking at the Mercedes drivers. I really want them to come and fight me. I want the battle.
He may feel lonely. Maybe when his problems are, okay, I'm doing the fastest lap or not. Am I taking too much risk over the white lines? Of course, his race is lonely compared to Mercedes, compared to Carlos today. And I'm sure he will prefer winning against some of the drivers like he used to do last year. Because last year he won in a dominant way, but Ferrari was always there. Even sometimes Mercedes. It's a shame that this year he's not finding any opponent, and not even his teammate, because of these two mistakes in Monaco and Barcelona. Two mistakes in a row, which maybe have turned the championship for Max in a huge way compared to what we expected in the first part of the season.
Well, Helmut Marko said coming into this race that he thought Max didn't consider Sergio Perez a title rival at any point anyway. So he needs that challenge from outside, doesn't he?
Yes, but this last two Grand Prix proved that maybe at the first part of the season with the two street track that Checo won, we were kind of hoping that he maintained the fight, but the big difference between the two Red Bull drivers is consistency. And that's the key to fight for a world title. And that's what Max has because of his past years fighting with Lewis. And I don't think Checo is that kind of driver to fight, and especially not against Max.
And what is worrying, I feel, about Perez's title plight this year is that he talked this weekend about changing his driving style coming into this race, maybe trying to drive the car a little bit more like Max, which worries me, Christian, because I feel that at this level it has to be instinctive, it has to be natural. And if you start trying to force a particular style on a driver, it never really ends well.
I think you're right. The only reason why you would do that is because your specific driving style doesn't suit the car. I think it's a sign that he's desperate to find this little bit, bigger bit that's still missing to Max. But yeah, I think it also shows that it's not only the Red Bull that is so supreme. It's Red Bull and Max Verstappen, and we shouldn't consider it as boring and shouldn't blame Max and Red Bull. We should just try to enjoy to witness this driver in this car, because if you look back in Formula One history in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years time, you will remember it as Michael in the Ferrari days, Lewis in the Mercedes days, and you just have to appreciate what this combination is doing. And look back at the qualifying in Monaco, what he did in the last sector. That was so epic. That was unbelievable just to watch. And I get goosebumps when I talk about it, because we should just be happy that we can witness something like that.
Enjoy perfection. It's the Tiger Woods era when Tiger was winning everything in the 90s in golf. It's Man City in the UK at the minute in football, isn't it?
And the good thing is now, having Sergio in the other car, he's a known driver in the paddock. He's won a race with another team, and Checo has proved in the past that he's good enough. But Max is just even better than that, and that's so fascinating to see for me.
There's so much pressure that Max puts on his teammates, isn't it? In that you often see the teammates start strong at the start of the year. They've spent the winter away from Max. They've become energized.
They've thought about a plan of how they're going to beat him, and it often starts well, and then the grind of the season gets going and they get worn away just by the relentlessness of Max Verstappen.
Yeah, every winter the same. You could speak with Checo in Bahrain and he looks like, yeah, but we work over the winter with my engineers and now we know how we can push and whatever, but it's a perfect machine. But it's not only the car, it's not only the driver, it's also a perfect team. I don't remember any mistake from Red Bull, any big mistake during the season. And on Max's side, if he's just driving perfect, he's making the biggest difference between teammates. We cannot say that Checo's season is bad. He's second there. He would be first if Max wasn't here. But he's making like the biggest gap. I don't see any other team with that such a difference, maybe only Aston Martin with Fernando and Lance.
Lewis Hamilton comes round the final corner for his 11th podium finish at this circuit. And again, it's a happy hunting ground for him. P2 on the road, a little punch of the air, and that will be completed with a superb performance for Mercedes. That upgrade working well today. Russell climbs 9 places to the podium positions.
Mega job, guys. Mega job. Thank you so much for everyone back at the factory continuing to push. Mega job to George as well. Awesome drive.
Nicely done from P12. This sport's a bit more fun when the car's fast, eh?
I saw for the second time this year Adrian Newey spending a long time on the grid looking at the Mercedes, of course. It's the second race this year that they've had the upgrades. They brought them to Monaco, but this was the first permanent racetrack in which they could really analyse them. And bam, second and third. What was your take on the upgrades that Mercedes brought here?
Well, I'm not an engineer, but there's obviously something going on there when Ferrari is not able to catch up at all. And Aston Martin looks kind of steady, but not progressing through the field. They are equal far as the first race of the season. But yeah, the Mercedes has made the biggest step over this year. They found something, and I think that Aston, especially Aston, because Ferrari is in another step behind, but Aston should be worried now, because this Mercedes is able to fight for more than podiums now.
Mercedes have overtaken Aston Martin in the Constructors' Championship, but all you Mercedes fans out there, Christian, we shouldn't get too excited yet.
Remember, when we were here 1 year ago, exactly 1 year ago, I think Lewis had this little
puncher.
Contact in the first lap with Kevin and was last and wanted to already withdraw from the race, and then he kept going, and at some point he was, I'm not sure if it's really true, but Mercedes said he was fastest guy on the circuit. It's always difficult to say that because different tires and so on, but they were really, really strong here last year as well, and I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure they made a step with the package they brought to Monaco, where you just couldn't see how much it's worth. Now, here is a real test track, but still it suited Mercedes last year as well. And Mercedes is in danger to do the same mistake as last year. You remember when they won the race in Sao Paulo? They thought, yeah, we're going to make this concept work. But in Sao Paulo, there were circumstances like it was a sprint weekend. Red Bull just got it wrong under Parc Fermé conditions. And I'm pretty sure I don't have to tell them. They know it a lot better than I do. But we should be probably a bit more cautious on lessons learned from this race. Even if we always say Barcelona is such a fantastic test track, and if it's good here, it's good everywhere. But sometimes a track, in my opinion, can be too perfect, because then they have the environment they have in the wind tunnel they have in the simulator and everywhere, but not every track is like that. But
and is it still a good racetrack? Because for the first time since 2006, we had the fast last two corners. Wonderful to watch on the in-car. That turn 14 taken at 165 miles an hour in qualifying. Almost flat, but not quite. Without that last chicane, there isn't really a slow corner on this racetrack anymore. So is it a good test track?
For the aerodynamicists, definitely. So a lot of fast corners, long cornering. I still think it's a pretty good one. Then you have turn 5, which is a slow one. So you still have almost every type of corner. Then you have so much data from the past, even if the layout changed slightly, you still have quite a lot of data, sector 1, sector 2. So I think they can learn quite a lot from here. But I agree with you. The last turn is just amazing, or the last sector now. I just don't get the reason why they changed turn 10 a few years ago, because there you had a really good overtaking spot as well.
I can't help about this track because, of course, I like it. It's our track, or our best track in Spain. It obviously has some spots that could help and are not helping. Overtaking is not possible, or maybe it's too easy at the straight, especially with this DRS effect. Turn 10 used to be good, then it changed more than 10 years ago, and it was good enough. It was an overtaking point because it was a big break-in. It's not anymore. Maybe they mixed the MotoGP and F1 track, and the mix is not good enough. But now they took a right decision of getting rid of the chicane. Now the third sector looks amazing. It's true that it's not a slow sector anymore like it used to be. Everybody was looking into the third sector here to think about Monaco, and now it's nothing comparable. I went to the third sector on free practice, and it's amazing. The way the cars enter the last corner is so fast, so impressive. But it's a shame that the race hasn't been as fun as everybody, as the huge crowd expected.
Well, Jesus, I'd say there was more overtaking in this Spanish Grand Prix than I think there have been in many Spanish Grand Prix. Obviously, as you say, helped by the DRS, but we saw some really good overtakes. Of course, it got quite spicy at the start, first between Carlos Sainz and Max Verstappen. I thought Carlos really pushed him hard into turn one, and then Lewis Hamilton gets hit from behind by Lando Norris, and then George Russell did a great overtake in the race on Carlos as well. And I thought there was a good spread of overtaking, so they've got the balance right. The DRS was the right length, and I think they could follow through that fast final corner, because these new regulations generate so much of their downforce underneath the car. So well done to Formula One and to the Circuit de Catalunya, because I thought that was a really as good a race as we're going to get around here. Also, it was probably helped early doors because we had the Red Bulls on the medium tyre and the bulk of the field on the soft tyre. So you had Checo Perez coming through, but maybe not at the rate I was expecting.
Yeah, maybe you
am I now contradicting myself, saying, there's great overtaking, but Checo couldn't actually make his way
maybe
through?
Maybe you see myself disappointed, but it's because the Spanish drivers were coming here with higher expectations, maybe with a podium. They haven't been on a Spanish podium for a long time, since last win from Fernando in 2013. And suddenly, you said the start was amazing, and I thought Carlos could get over Max, especially because of the slipstream effect. The starting is so far from the breaking point, so maybe an overtaking wasn't impossible. But Carlos is not a dirty driver. He left the space, and it was impossible to overtake a great start from Max. And then Fernando's race, maybe it wasn't the best of the season from Aston, not from himself the weekend. So it's a shame, but you're right. There were some good moves from behind. Maybe not for the top three guys, but after behind them, yes.
Come on then, Jesus. Let's have our Spanish section very briefly. The circuit was a sellout. It looked fantastic. What was it, 300,000 people?
Yes, and
over the weekend,
125 just on Sunday.
How much excitement was there during the build-up? How many pages of Diario AS did you have to write about Formula One?
A lot, more than three every day. And especially you feel the hype the moment you go to behind the grandstands and you see the faces. People speak to you about Formula One, and I'm impressed because they know about Formula One more than me. And that doesn't put me in a good situation.
I don't believe that.
But I'm really surprised how the new era Formula One fans are so into the sport, that they get so deep into every piece you write, and they know everything happening. They know about strategies. They know about team principals. They know every driver. This wasn't like this in the past. It's really amazing.
Are we back at the sort of mid-2000s level of passion for Formula One in Spain?
I would say it's different, because that time it was Fernando's fans. They knew about Fernando. They wanted Fernando to win all the time. But I'm not sure they weren't that into Formula One itself, into the sport. Now, the people like the sport. They like Fernando, they like Carlos, but they like Charles Leclerc, and they like Lando, and they recognize Max and Luis, and even Esteban, which wasn't the favorite driver here because he was teammate with Fernando last year, and there were some clashes around. But I'm really surprised how the Spanish fans, I can think it's happening everywhere now, not only in Spain, but they like Formula One and they also like the Spanish drivers, but the sport is getting huge here. It's becoming the second most popular sport just behind football, and this through 2-3 years ago seemed impossible.
It's been a fascinating growth, and there's now talk of a race in Madrid. Stefano Domenicali has confirmed this weekend that it is a real bid. Do you think Spain could support two Grand Prix? I don't know whether Stefano wants that, but do you think there is the appetite here, if Stefano allowed it, for there to be a Barcelona race and a Madrid race?
I spoke to Stefano about that last Friday. He told to me that it doesn't look possible, but it cannot. Maybe it could happen, maybe 2026, I don't know. But yes, the Madrid project is there. It looks promising. Maybe it's a different kind of race, more like the Miami-style race or Mexico-style race, and not all track style like Barcelona. I'm from Madrid, so I'm not partial here.
You want to stay at home, don't you?
I would love to having a home Grand Prix for once. But I'm not partial. I would love Madrid having a race, and it looks good.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Lewis, coming to you, very well done as well. Your 11th podium here in Barcelona. How sweet was this podium?
This one was very special. I think we got a great reception from the crowd here, and yeah, to be able to share the podium with my teammate, I think it's really special given just the journey that we've been on together to try and close the gap to the guys ahead. This is a really amazing day for us.
Now, everyone's talking about the upgrades. How did the car feel to drive over a race distance?
Car felt great today. Friday was a real struggle with the balance. It was way out the window. It was very, very hard to drive, very unpredictable. And then we did some great work overnight, which helped us get on the right track on Saturday. And I think we did pretty decent work in trying to understand the different downforce levels. And the race today, the car felt great. Honestly, it's just I couldn't match the times that Max was doing, but definitely the best the car's been for the past year and a half. So that's super encouraging. I think not only for me but for everybody in the team, this will be a big boost for everybody's morale, and and for George to come from 12th to 3rd is just remarkable. So really awesome result for us as a team.
Great result as a team, but the team was quick here at this race last year as well. So is it too early to draw too many conclusions?
Yep. I mean, they normally say if you're quick in Barcelona, then car should be generally good everywhere. But I think we will be strong in the next races. There will be times where the Aston maybe is slightly ahead, or the Ferrari maybe is ahead. But I think our race pace continues to be a strength of ours. As it was last year, and now I think this weekend particularly we've understood the car even more, so I think we can count on that being strong moving forwards. We just got to try and lift the whole overall performance of the car a little bit more to try and close the gap to these guys.
Can we just have a few more words from you, Christian, about the performance of Mercedes this weekend? Because I want to know, you've already said let's not get too excited, but did you see anything in that upgrade
that makes you think that this car will be more consistent over the balance of the season?
What is a concept? You've heard that question from the Mercedes engineers quite a lot. I think now they have side pods, and for me this is a concept. We were talking to Andrea Stella this morning, and he was talking about side pods and why these wide side pods work better with this generation of cars and bring the best out of the floor, because everyone is talking about the floor, that the floor is the big performance differentiator, because 40% of the total downforce are generated by the floor. Yeah, but the floor has to work, and it doesn't work in isolation. So Formula One car, you always have to look in every single aspect, from the front wing to the rear wing, and also from the side pods, in my opinion. Toto said they just wanted to take out something of the equation. He's still not convinced that the concept of the side pods is the better one. They just wanted to take something out of the equation to be sure where the problem is. But I think that was part of the problem. For me, it's definitely the right direction, but who am I to judge 1,000 engineers in Brackley?
Well, you are an engineer by training, aren't you? Didn't you read engineering at university?
Yeah, but then I stopped because I started with Motorsport magazine. But I did a lot of Formula Student, and that was amazing.
I think one thing that really helps Mercedes is the consistency of their two drivers. Okay, George Russell struggled a little bit in qualifying and in practice, but it came together for him in the race. But I'm actually looking on a macro level from, you know, over a whole season, they're very consistent. And actually, the reason Mercedes are ahead of Aston Martin in the Constructors' Championship now is purely, I think, because Mercedes have got two cracking drivers who are very consistent, whereas Lance Stroll has struggled at certain races this year in the second Aston Martin. So they haven't been getting the double points finishes that Mercedes have.
Fully agree with that. If Aston Martin would have two drivers from the caliber of Fernando Alonso, they would definitely be second in the Constructors' Championship. And that's going to be a really interesting talking point, I think, in the next months. Okay, after this race, probably not so much, because I think Lance did a really good job this weekend. Fernando didn't do his best job this weekend. He admitted it, and he was really angry with himself after qualifying. He said he thought about it last night, and he wanted to turn back the time and do the last Q3 lap once again. And that shows that he has the championship mentality as well. That's going to be interesting in the next few months and for the future.
It's such an interesting dynamic between the teammates as well, in the way that Fernando came on the radio late in the race to say, "Don't worry, Lance, I'm not going to overtake you." I don't know whether that was a coded message to say, "Actually, let me through." But even at Mercedes, you had that really bizarre accident, if we can call it that, in qualifying, where they tripped over each other and Lewis lost his front wing. So even the best teammates can get it wrong.
Toto was asked yesterday after qualifying if it reminded him of 2016, Rosberg versus Hamilton, but he said no shades of 2016. And I fully agree with Toto. So there was nothing between the teammates. It was just miscommunication, what they said. There was coincidence because George had to abort his first lap. Then they were somehow synced in their outlaps, Lewis and George. That shouldn't have been the case. Then Carlos came from behind. George had to let him pass, was very slow. Lewis already started his lap when George started his lap a bit later. So there was just coincidence, miscommunication, but in my opinion, nothing that says something about the relationship between two drivers. It was bad luck, miscommunication, and yeah. But not worth to make up a huge story between Lewis and George.
Now, we keep flip-flopping between Mercedes and Aston Martin. So let's go back to Aston now. So Fernando Alonso goes into the gravel in quali at the start of Q1, really badly damages his floor. That compromises the rest of his qualifying. If he hadn't done that, Jesus, what do you think might have been possible from him?
Well, he was pointing into the first row. He says that he thinks that without the mistake, without the damage on the floor, he would be fighting for maybe second place, third place. And the race, even without the pace, even with this Aston Martin pace from Barcelona, which isn't brilliant, the race would have been different. Maybe fighting for the podium, for the last spot on the podium, or fourth place, it would look a lot different. I asked Fernando right when he jumped out of the car today, and he said that he's not worried about Mercedes. He thinks that this is a track thing, just like you said. This is Mercedes track. It has been in the past, and actually his words were, "In Canada, we will crush them." So, I love
his fighting spirit.
This is Fernando every day. So
we will crush them in Canada. They've got some upgrades coming for Canada, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, that's the point. He thinks that with the upgrades they will bring in Canada and the following race, that he expects Aston not to slow down in this fight. But also, it's fair to say that this fight, Aston-Mercedes, in a way, Mercedes is up there because they have two strong drivers, but also I don't know how much Fernando is pushing the Aston up. Maybe the Aston Martin is below Mercedes in a regular basis, but this Fernando with his five podiums in seven races, who is maybe putting the car a step above its real place.
Do you think he's concerned about the longer term? Because, okay, we're talking about Mercedes now, but we're going to come on to Ferrari in a minute, and then there's Alpine, who have taken a step forward. Do you think he's concerned about that middle order now catching up with him?
Yeah, well, this middle zone of the grid is very complicated. Every team who falls down there, it can get messy in every race weekend. You are fighting for fifth place, but maybe for 10th place, and there are no good points to find them there. But I think the Aston Martin is still one of the strongest cars here, and probably the more steady one, the one who can be on a similar performance at every track of the calendar. So I don't think this can be a one-off. They have been fighting for podiums for the first third of the season, and it should be like this in the second third in the European season.
What about Russell, though? He gets second. He needed it from the drop zone to P2, and it drops in Charles Leclerc to the drop zone. Charles Leclerc, 19th on the grid in an enormous shock.
We are out, right?
Yes, we are out.
Unbelievable.
So, Ferrari. We talk about the Mercedes upgrades. They came to Monaco, but this is the first chance we've really seen them. Ferrari have brought a lot of upgrades here, and yet their fastest qualifier qualified P19 and had to start from the pit lane. Explain that, Christian.
Ferrari cannot even explain it themselves. I mean, Charles said he had quite a lot of problems in left-hand corners.
Did they discover that something was wrong with the car? I know they changed the gearbox and the whole rear end, but did they actually discover a problem on his car?
The problem is that it's under parc fermé conditions, so they weren't allowed to work on the car during the night, so they didn't have the time to do a proper analysis here at the track. So that's why they changed the whole rear end, because then you take out a lot of elements out of the equation.
Yeah, if you're a team and you've had the new bits on the car, and the guy who is recognized as your fastest driver over one lap has had such a horrible time, why wouldn't you just break the parc fermé rules to find out what's wrong?
In the end, they broke the parc fermé rules as well.
Yeah, they did it anyway. Yeah. So
yeah, but I mean, they sorted it out. Charles said it was a completely different feeling today, so the problems he had yesterday were not there anymore. And then they have the time to analyze it properly in the factory. So I think that's okay, and that has nothing to do probably with the upgrade. That's, I don't know if there was a crack in the gearbox casing, so he didn't have the strength in the rear suspension or whatever. Those rear ends are so complicated, so I understand that they want to do a proper analysis back in the factory.
What were the drivers saying about the performance of the car? I mean, let's talk about Carlos, who had a much better Saturday.
Yeah, but the Saturday was never the problem of the Ferrari. So during the race, it was like most of us would have expected it. They were not great, like the whole second half of last year. And we were all asking the question why. And Ferrari cannot answer it themselves. And so I've just attended Fred Vasseur's media session after the race. And he said exactly the same as the driver said. They have inconsistency. At some stints during the race, the car worked pretty okay. At some, it just didn't. There is no pattern they can see. Nothing with a medium tire or hard tire, whatever. Pretty similar to what they had in Miami. And they just don't know where this inconsistency is coming from. And that's, for me, the biggest problem, because if you don't know where it's coming from, you don't know where you should work on. So that's really sad to see.
But strategically, I felt there were still more errors today, unless it was driven by these inconsistencies. But if you're starting Charles Leclerc from the pit lane on the hard tyre, why do you pit him after 17 laps? Unless there was a problem with the inconsistency, maybe.
I mean, the hard tyre seemed like it didn't work too well today. If you look at the Red Bulls as well, Max was complaining about the hard tyre quite a lot. So probably because it was not really warm today, pretty cloudy. Track temperature was very low, a lot lower than on Friday, for example. So I think the hard tyre wasn't probably not the best one today. They realized it. They thought, okay, we have to get rid of it. And then, but I mean, for Charles, the race was already done. Because they
was it a test session for Charles?
Probably, because they don't have the performance advantage. And even with the performance advantage of Red Bull, you thought, you were touching on this earlier, that you expected Checo to get through the field a bit faster. But still, with their pace advantage, it was not that easy. And then the Ferrari, a lot slower in the race, coming even from the pit lane and not even in the midfield, so it was a bit expected.
What about Carlos Jesus? Have you spoken to him since the race? You know, starts his home Grand Prix on the front row, goes wheel to wheel with Max Verstappen through turns one and two, yet finishes the Grand Prix fifth.
In a way, for him, it's frustrating and it's painful because he wants to shine in front of his crowd, and he's starting in a nice place to fight for a win. It should be a place to fight for a win, the second place. But then he's racing backwards and he's losing places, and he feels frustrating that he cannot even fight, because the moment he pushes for two laps, maybe he tries to defend from a Mercedes, from George, he blocks or he goes to the dirty side of the track, then the tires will overheat and he will lose maybe another 2, 3, 4 seconds, and the pace won't be there and he won't recover. So, you know, he's thinking too many things inside the car, but none of them are pointing into attacking or trying to get a good result here. He's just, his words are, this car doesn't allow the driver to shine at all, because you do it right on Saturday and it looks like you are going to fight for something, but then on the race there's nothing else to do.
And he was complaining about the strategy, as he was in Monaco last week as well.
Well, but he was pointing more on to the inconsistency of the car, because the first stint it was decent, he wasn't too far, but then the second stint is a disaster. He loses like two places, then the last place with Checo, he loses on the last stint. But anyway, at the second stint, the two Mercedes come. One of the Mercedes was coming from the 12th place on the grid, so it doesn't look like the two cars are playing on the same league right now.
Looking at the positives, will Carlos be pleased to hear that Lewis Hamilton is going to sit down this week with Toto Wolff to discuss his new Mercedes contract, and actually all of the Ferrari stuff was just noise?
I guess yes. I mean, nobody likes rumours.
How did he deal with those rumours? I assume you spoke to him about the Lewis to Ferrari stuff.
Yeah, he takes it easy. He's used to Formula One. He hasn't been on both sides. He has lost a seat on Renault too with Ricciardo. So he knows how Formula One goes, but he seemed comfortable all the time during these last weeks. From the first time, it looked like Lewis is just negotiating with Mercedes, and this was maybe part of the negotiation. But it's good that this is coming to an end, and it's also good that Carlos is proving on track that he deserves the place he is, because we shouldn't forget, we all know that Charles is a superb driver, one lap race pace, and Carlos, for one reason or another, he was doing well here in Barcelona. He was doing better than Charles, and he is in front in the championship. It's a bad season for the two of them, but Carlos isn't doing anything wrong.
I felt Carlos was really lifted by the home crowd here.
Yes, yes.
There was an energy about him that isn't always evident.
He may look like he doesn't speak too much, but he gets emotional. Of course, you get emotional when you are on your home track. This is our home track in Spain. Formula One has been here for 33 times, which is a funny number. And of course, Carlos, I think that maybe on Saturday, that last tenth was coming from the crowd here to be second on the grid.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com. Let's move things on to Alpine. Two cars in the points today, Ocon in eighth and Gasly coming home ninth. But let's give this some context, Christian. We've already mentioned on this pod about that final sector from Max Verstappen in Monaco, but I'm going to put it to you, as much as we all enjoyed that Verstappen qualifying lap and the Alonso effort for that matter and the Charles Leclerc effort, God, it was good, wasn't it? It was only 7 days ago. But Esteban Ocon's qualifying lap in Monaco was stunning. And I think he came here riding the crest of a wave, and we were all looking to see if Alpine could reproduce that form on a very different, much faster racetrack. What is the conclusion that we've drawn about the pace of the Alpine?
I mean, that it won't be a complete repeat of Monaco was clear, because in Monaco the driver can do a lot more. But you have to say, with this generation of cars and with the teams that are pretty close to each other, the cars are pretty close to each other, the driver is a bigger factor again in Formula 1. I think that's good. But coming back to your point, the Alpine, they had a huge upgrade. It was Monaco when they introduced the new side pods. They look a bit similar to the Aston Martin side pods. They were the first time to have this little slide in the side pod. Now they have the huge one as the Aston Martin. And it seems like it's working pretty well. But to be completely honest, I expected more from Alpine from the beginning of the season, because they were pretty confident going into the season and they were pretty far off. Now they are where I expected them to be at the beginning of the season.
You talk about the upgrades. Do you think the mirrors are quite difficult to see out of? Because Pierre Gasly had a few issues in qualifying with the mirrors, first with Sainz, then Verstappen. Do you think he deserved a sixth-place grid drop for that?
Well, if the stewards say.
It is what it is.
I mean, the good thing is that the decisions are very well written. So they said in one occasion he was to blame for it because he got the instructions from the team, and in the other case it was the other way around. The team just didn't give him the right instructions. So viewing it from the TV angle, it was pretty obvious that he didn't go out of the way. That's the rules. Plus three. He did it twice. So bad luck, bad management from the team and from him.
Esteban, such an amazing weekend in Monaco. You come here and you finish eighth. What is the feeling right now?
The feeling is still good. I think it's been, you know, two excellent weeks, you know, for us. I mean, we've scored 19 points on my side in two races and some more with Pierre. So, you know, it's been a very productive 2 weeks. Obviously, yes, we come from a podium, so to finish eighth, you know, there's a bit of mixed feeling. But, you know, in general, I think it has been super positive, and we're super excited in the team that the updates that we bring have worked. But we still have work to do in the race. Qualifying has been very strong on two occasions here and in Monaco since we bring the update, and this we can be proud of.
So do you think you've got some consistency now for the rest of the season?
We have consistency, hopefully, in qualifying. I mean, we've come from, you know, two weekends when we've been fast in qualifying. But in the race, as I said, you know, we are back to more how we were before, and that's where the focus needs to go.
There's such an upbeat feeling about you, and actually I see that Michel's just got your trophy from Monaco here as well. Is that
he has, and you're carrying Monaco helmet.
I'm carrying your Monaco. God, I mustn't drop it.
No, don't drop it, please. Don't drop it.
Look, thank you very much. Look, well done this weekend.
Thank you very much, Tom.
All right,
see you soon.
I need to give you your helmet back.
Please.
Thank you.
Good to hear from Esteban. He's obviously a strength from the car now, but I don't want to take responsible from the driver. What he did in Monaco is just superb. He could even have a pole in Monaco, which is amazing for any driver, more when you're doing with a slower car. Good to say that Alpine is going further in the grid, but I think Esteban is one of the best drivers out there right now.
Do you claim him as one of your own?
Well,
because his dad's Spanish. In fact, I think
his
a lot
name
of
is Spanish.
Okay.
My grandfather used to be called Esteban, so it's a very Spanish name.
I think a lot of his family live quite near the track
yes,
here in Barcelona.
Barcelona, yes, that's true.
So when he's doing well and you thought he had pole in Monaco, you were ready to claim him?
I couldn't, because he used to be Fernando's teammate and that didn't end well with the
clashes
actually, in Brazil.
Well, actually, Jesus, let's talk about today. On the TV pitches, when Fernando came to overtake Esteban in the race, it looked quite an aggressive defence from Esteban, at least on the head-on shot. But Alonso was very relaxed about it after the race.
And drivers have to defend. I mean, you don't have to go over the limit, but I think Esteban is a very aggressive driver, but he doesn't go too often over the limit, so I like the overtaking. Maybe some other times overtaking gets too easy in this track at the end of the straight, but that wasn't easy at all, and that's good for the fans who paid their ticket to watch a good movement today.
It's interesting, you know, listening to Ocon there, he's such a nice guy, isn't he? Yet when the visor comes down, he seems to grow horns and become a bit like me when I go karting. He just seems to become really aggressive, doesn't he?
Yes. He's that kind of driver. When he feels the result, he goes there. I think that last 2 years with Fernando, he proved that he can be a top driver. Everybody was saying, oh, remember Stoffel Vandoorne, who had won everything in the GP2 and before, and suddenly he faced Fernando and he's nothing. Esteban is just a strong driver, strong enough to score more points than Fernando in one season. I think only Jenson Button did it in the past. So
Fernando will claim the unreliability card there, won't he?
He's not lying. Fernando is right when he says that. But also a season is very long, and Fernando was steady on his performance, and most of the times he was, if not in front of Fernando, just one spot behind him. That's something nice from him.
Great to see Zhou Guan Yu back in the points in the Alfa Romeo. I felt he drove a super race, very aggressive, and he climbed through from 13th on the grid to 9th. That's in that car, especially when you look and see that Bottas came home in 19th, I thought was certainly his best race of the season so far.
I feel a bit for Zhou because he's flying a bit under the radar. It seems like he's always there when the car is not there. Then he's outperforming Valtteri quite by a margin. But this time, the car was there in the race and he was there as well. So hats off. I think he showed it from time to time, but not at the right moments. So, and this time it was the right moment and fantastic drive from him.
What do you think the mood is in Alfa Romeo at the minute? Because up and down the pit lane, we're seeing team signing top engineers. McLaren have made a load of announcements. We'll come on to McLaren in a minute. Yet it's all quite quiet at Alfa Romeo at the minute. I wonder whether there's a sort of political reason for that, in that obviously Audi are coming in and maybe they don't want to make too much noise while it's still called Alfa Romeo. There may be a reason behind it, but do you feel that the building blocks are there for them to be able to accelerate their development in the second half of this season?
Actually, I think there are two pretty different projects. One is just a normal development program of the car. The other one is building up or building the foundations for a future works team. So from what I've heard, it's just like the team has to grow quite a lot to compete with with other big teams. They are too small for that. The development rate the last 12 months was a bit disappointing for me, to be honest. They started really, really well into the new era, but mainly because they had an advantage with the weight. I don't want to take anything away because you had to reach the minimum weight. It was a really difficult task, as we know. But when this advantage was gone, yeah, they just look back at the second half of last year and the final in Abu Dhabi, what they had to do just to get P7 over the line, I think. Was it 6-7? They just tried to destroy Aston Martin's race in Abu Dhabi. That was the only chance they had. So that shows development rate last year was not great. They didn't make a huge step this year. So I think the long-term project, Audi, is a pretty big task. I don't want to say it's the reason why they are not good at the moment, but it shows you that they have to do quite a lot of work, and that's also the reason why they are probably outdeveloped by some other competitors at the moment.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda Racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
I did want to touch on McLaren. Lando Norris, third on the grid. Didn't last very long for him because of the front wing issue on Lewis's rear tyre. But having had such stunning pace in qualifying, and let's not forget that Oscar Piastri, his teammate, was faster than Lando through two of the three sectors in qualifying until he made a mistake at turn 10. So that car was really quick in quali, yet the race pace just was not there. Okay, I know Lando's race was ruined because he had to pit at the end of lap one, but even when he got going, he wasn't setting the world alight. How do you explain the difference between Saturday and Sunday with that car?
That's a very interesting topic, and one we were talking to Andrea about with Andrea Stella quite a lot this weekend, and it was absolutely expected. When you listen to Lando's and Oscar's comments yesterday after the good qualifying, Lando said, yeah, we're going to be lapped twice by Max, if I'm optimistic. So he was accelerating a bit there, but Andrea Stella is probably by far the best explainer here in the paddock. It's absolutely amazing to listen to him.
Of course, team principal at McLaren, but formerly an engineer at Ferrari with Alonso, and then that he came to McLaren to front up the engineering team, didn't he? So he knows his eggs, as they say.
Yeah, definitely. And he's not only very good in knowing the eggs, but also in explaining them to some nerds like us. And that's really good fun. That's almost as much fun as watching the cars on track, listening to Andrea Stella. So what did he say to us yesterday? You want to know now. He said, on Saturday, there were perfect conditions for McLaren. It was cold, and they are pretty good in heating the tires up. So that was one point. Then there was no wind at all yesterday. And the McLaren is affected by wind pretty heavily compared to the other cars. Then new soft tire has quite a lot of grip that masks a lot of problems. That's one of the things why the Ferrari is so good in qualifying and bad in the race. Also, we were talking about the Alpine, the difference between qualifying and the race. A fresh tire with the extra grip masks quite a lot. And then the type of corners, they are pretty good here for McLaren. High-speed corners, they are very good.
Can I interrupt you here? Because Lando Norris came on this show when we were in Miami, and he told myself and Pedro de la Rosa that McLaren doesn't like long corners, he said.
That was the question I asked Andrea yesterday.
Well, there you go. Because I wanted to say to him, if I'd been there, hang on, there's loads of long corners here. Turns 3, 4, 5, 10. Last two corners are quite long. So that doesn't stack up.
That's exactly the point I raised yesterday in Andrea's media session.
And what did he say?
So that was the next factor I wanted to mention. He said the long cornerings here, they are super fast. They are almost no corners. They are like 270 kph or even faster. Then turn 14, 260 kph. So it's not such a long cornering time they spend there during qualifying. But then during the race, it's a different story. The car is a lot heavier. You don't have the grip from the tire. So the cornering gets a lot longer than in qualifying. That's one of the main reasons why they have this big difference between qualifying pace and race pace. Then he said also that the asphalt is pretty smooth here, not so many bumps. They can lower the ride high quite a bit. That's good for them. All factors that I just mentioned are contributing to the outstanding performance on Saturday, but then to the not so good performance on Sunday.
So I guess they are looking forward to the upgrades that are coming to Austria.
I think a few weeks ago or months ago, Andrea called it a B-spec. That's quite a statement. Not even Mercedes is calling it a B-spec, not Ferrari.
But is that what's coming to Austria?
I think so. If I got him right, then the B-spec is coming to Austria. He said it's coming before the summer break. I'm looking forward to it.
Jesus, what did you make of Lando Norris in particular this weekend?
He was impressive on Saturday, like he always is. He's a very fast driver on quali pace. We discovered that since his first season in Formula One. Then he got bad luck in the race. I don't think he would have been, maybe not even at the points, with a normal race with the fast cars that he had behind. But one time and another, he's always proving that he's the driver we are all waiting for, but he's not finding the right car to show that every weekend.
Right, final thing I wanted to ask you guys about was the pace of Haas and the contrasting fortunes of their drivers. Nico Hülkenberg lining up 7th, Kevin Magnussen all the way back in 17th. That car looked very, very good in Hülkenberg's hands in qualifying, less so in the race. Were you surprised by the pace of Haas?
Yes, especially on Friday and also Saturday. And it's not the first time that Nico shines in quali pace, but we shouldn't forget that Kevin got a pole last year, so it's a kind of intriguing car that you cannot really know what to expect from them. Now we know that getting points in Formula 1 is so complicated. There are four cars that maybe just all the time they will be there. You know, Red Bull, Mercedes, Aston, Ferrari, this is 8 spots. Today only 7 because of Charles, but we're talking about maybe the last 3 places of the top 10. That's kind of hard for what you say, Haas, McLaren, Alfa Tauri, Williams. It's kind of complicated. Formula 1 is becoming quite hard for the smaller teams. When now that we have 4 big teams, I will call 4 big teams. One of them is Red Bull, but the other 3 are quite big.
So the top 10 look like this. Max Verstappen took win number 40 of his Formula One career and his 2nd in Spain. Behind him, Lewis Hamilton was 2nd, his 11th podium in Spain. And George Russell rounded out the podium for his first trip to the podium since the Brazilian Grand Prix last year. Sergio Perez was 4th, having started 11th. Carlos Sainz was the lead Ferrari in 5th, with Lance Stroll 6th. Fernando Alonso 7th, his worst result of the season so far. Esteban Ocon was 8th, Zhou Guan Yu 9th, his best result of the season, and Pierre Gasly rounded out the top 10 in 10th. In the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull Racing are dominating. They're 135 points ahead of Mercedes, who have jumped into second place ahead of Aston Martin in third. Ferrari are fourth on 100 points, Alpine are fifth on 40, with McLaren in no man's land in P6 on 17. Haas and Alfa Romeo are equal on 8 points after Joe's 2 points for finishing 9th for Alfa Romeo. In 9th, it is AlphaTauri on 2 points, and Williams are still 10th with 1 point. In the Drivers' Championship, Max Verstappen now has a commanding 53-point advantage over his teammate Sergio Perez. Fernando Alonso is 3rd, just 12 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton. George Russell is 5th, just 7 points ahead of Carlos Sainz. Charles Leclerc is 7th on 42, having failed to score in the Spanish Grand Prix. Lance Stroll is 8th, Esteban Ocon 9th, and Pierre Gasly is 10th. Well, guys, before we go, can I ask you each for your driver of the day here at the 2023 Spanish Grand Prix?
I think it's very easy. The winner. The winner takes it all. But in this case, it's just like this. Max was a 10 in, at every part of the weekend.
I asked him in the press conference, it was before the cameras were turned on, I said, Max, fastest in every practice session, fastest in qualifying, fastest lap in the race. You were in the race. And he went, yeah, but I wasn't fastest in Q1.
Yeah, I think he's the only one who noticed that. Yeah. Nobody else remembers that he hasn't been on top for once this weekend.
You're absolutely right. He has been sensational. Christian?
What can I say other than Max Verstappen? I think in Q1, for excuse, he only used one set of soft tyres there. So most of the others, I think, went for two fresh soft. So he would definitely have been faster than in Q1 if he wanted. But there was no need to do so. If I wouldn't go for Max Verstappen, I would probably go for Joe today. I think it was an impressive drive from him, but you have to go with Max after this race. After this weekend, probably we will say exactly the same after the season.
I agree with both of you. I think Max has been sensational. I think Joe has been sensational. I'm also going to give a nod. So I guess this is my driver of the day, partly to say something different, but I thought George Russell was sensational today, to come from 12th on the grid to finish third. And I said to him after the race, at what point did a podium look real to you? And he said, actually, during the first stint, the car just was different to drive today, and he really drove it well. So I'm going to say George Russell. Guys, thank you both very much for your time. It's been fascinating to debrief the Spanish Grand Prix with you both, and I'll see you in Canada. Thank you.
Thank you. See you in Montreal.
Thank you very much.
Let's check in with our F1 fantasy team now, F1 Nation Racing. We kept the same lineup that we had for Monaco, so Verstappen, Alonso, Leclerc, Piastri and Tsunoda, with Ferrari and Aston Martin as our constructors. So not our strongest weekend, with three of our drivers outside the top 10. We scored 212 points and have now dropped down to 631st in the F1 Nation World Championship. So we've got to do something about that in the coming races. But the top three remains the same. The Dan Musthold leads the way with 2,270 points. In P2, it's Fergal's Flyers on 2,214. And then just a point below them is Thunder Table Racing in third, so very close battle there. And remember, you can join our league at any time to compete against us and other listeners. Search for the F1 Nation World Championship. And if you're not playing yet, it's not too late to join. And it's totally free. Just search online for F1 Fantasy to sign up, then choose your constructors and drivers using a $100 million budget. Thanks very much for listening. Before I go, a quick preview of this week's F1 Beyond the Grid, which is with Neil Oatley, who designed 5 championship-winning cars for McLaren between 1989 and 1999. I had a fascinating chat with him, and that show's out from Wednesday. But that's it from us. We'll be back with F1 Nation next Monday with our preview of the Canadian Grand Prix. But for now, F1 Nation is produced by F1 and Audioboom Studios.
...2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.